Let's start by talking about manufacturing. You've said that New Hampshire needs a new approach to manufacturing jobs, and you've said that approach should include partnerships between local manufacturers with community colleges, technical schools. This is something that a lot of Republicans and Democrats have been calling for. Since the community college system receives public funding, what kind of commitment does this approach, this partnership building approach, require in terms of the government?
Well, as a result of my forums around the state relative to manufacturing, we did three summits geographically, and we learned a couple of things. First, we had manufacturers at these summits as well as educators. And while I think New Hampshire has always felt that it has a very strong workforce, one of the things that we're hearing from manufacturers is that they're challenged right now in getting skilled workers for the what is being referred to as more highly technical manufacturing opportunities here in New Hampshire. So I do think that we need to play a stronger role in terms of the relationship between manufacturers and our technical community and four-year degree programs here in the state of New Hampshire. And from a federal perspective, any federal dollars that flow in for job retraining, I think, could be put into this kind of new relationship. But a lot of it, Brady, is just more about connecting the manufacturers geographically to their regional, technical high schools and community schools, so they can revamp their academic selections and options to be geared toward the career options at the different manufacturers throughout the district and throughout the state.
New Hampshire's manufacturing sector does a lot of exporting, and so because of that, there is a certain amount of instability in the market for its companies. I'll use Europe as an example. If Europe's economy stays sluggish, the market that a lot of Granite State companies are relying on isn't there, or it isn't strong enough, at least, as they would like it to be. Now, you've made a big push for calling for more stability and predictability in the economy, especially with the federal budget. But even if Congress and the president agree on a budget, there is a lot of instability out there. How much can we guarantee stability as a part of the global economy?
Well, there has to be stability in the sense of tax rates need to be set. The rules of the game, so to speak, that I continue to hear from manufacturers and small business owners say that they want to know what the rules are. They want them to stay the same, and they want them then to be able to put on their own path their growth models for their businesses. So the stability from a legislative perspective, I feel, means making sure that tax rates are finalized and provided, that information provided to our manufacturers. It also, though, means we've got to deal with sequestration. Half a sequestration deal affects the defense-related industry. And in New Hampshire, if we don't address sequestration, it means 4,000 jobs are at risk. We don't want to see that. We have in the House of Representatives passed multiple a menu of options for the Senate to address. And we await their action, but we hope they act very quickly.
Now, sequestration is something that all of the members of New Hampshire's congressional delegation have spoken out against. And I wanted to ask, because essentially what you're talking about is federal funding for companies in New Hampshire, which says that New Hampshire, in a way, relies on those federal tax dollars to boost the economy. Is that at all at odds with the broader concept of the free market being the driver of the economy in New Hampshire?
Well, no, it's not funding in the sense of just giving dollars to businesses. You know, the United States of America does contract companies to manufacture certain things on behalf of the needs of our armed forces. So the federal government's not going to produce those things. You're going to have people in the private sector produce those things. So this is very, very different than just providing, dollars to businesses through, a mechanism of just quote-unquote free money, as I think the other side would argue. I mean, this is about competitive bidding. This is about getting the best American companies to produce the needs for our armed services.
Would the same principle apply then, though, to something like a road building project where you're having competitive building process and you could say, well, that's something that would directly affect the economy in New Hampshire as well, keeping the roads up, making sure that the transportation infrastructure is there for New Hampshire businesses?
Sure. Part of the responsibility of the federal government is to make sure that it maintains, you know, its constitutionally required infrastructure. I served on the Transportation Committee. We were able to get a 2.5-year transportation bill, highway bill, out the door. And again, that is about providing dollars to states for federal roads, federal projects. State of New Hampshire, in receiving its dollars, now gets to determine how they're going to utilize those dollars for the many necessary projects here in the state of New Hampshire. But that's something important for us in New Hampshire, not just because of our economy and safety, but we want to make sure that we're maintaining our adhering to our constitutional requirements and responsibilities when it comes to infrastructure, and that's something that's cited in the Constitution itself.
You had mentioned taxes, and so I wanted to ask about your proposals on overhauling the tax system, lowering taxes across the board, across rates, but also eliminating loopholes. So I'll just take those one at a time. First, on lowering rates, proponents point out that this would free up money for people to spend and then also maybe hire. But critics argue you could just as easily say that it frees up money that people would hold on to and not spend because it's easier to do it that way and because they can hold on to it and just keep it in case things don't turn out so well. Is there any way to guarantee that if we choose a round of tax cuts to try and boost economic growth, that it would definitely lead to a growth in jobs?
Well, we first should start with the premise that taxpayer money is owned by taxpayers. It's not owned by the federal government. And some in Washington feel that this is their money. And that's just not the case. When you go to work and you work hard and you earn your money, it's yours. So from a perspective of trying to build consumer confidence, trying to have a growth rate for our GDP beyond what was announced in Q2, which is 1.3%, we want for long-term tax reform to have a simplified system that's flatter and fairer and broadens the base. That, I believe, will increase revenue to the Treasury. So then policymakers in Washington have a decision to make about, how to utilize those dollars. I feel that we should be paying down our deficit and long-term debt. But you would see with an increase in consumer dollars, an amount of money that is spent locally and nationally that increases our GDP growth, which needs to be around 4 to 5% in order to see the unemployment numbers truly come down.
So you wouldn't see a case like when we were getting the tax rebate checks during the President Bush's administration, where people are saying, "I'm just going to put this in the bank." That you're saying that people would definitely or almost definitely spend that money, put it back into the economy.
Well, I think there's two things. I mean, there's going to be a savings factor, but there will also be a spending factor, and people will spend dollars, somewhat predicated by how they feel as consumers, without the predictability and of where the tax rates are going to be, without having pro-growth policies put in place for small business owners to create job opportunities, people are going to hold on to their money. So it's not just about taxes. It is about the overall philosophy of spending levels in Washington, long-term decisions about where our economic policies are going to be and the types of economic policies that are going to be put in place. So it's a whole host of things that have to occur in order for, I think, the consumer to feel more confident about spending money. But the reality is if you give certainty in the tax rates, if you give certainty to small business owners about what the rules of the game are going to be, what the regulatory environment is going to be, if you do away with some of the mandates coming down from Washington, including in healthcare and the Affordable Care Act, where you've got 12 of the 21 taxes are affecting people with incomes under $250,000, if you change those policies, that I would argue, and I think Granite Staters would argue, just haven't worked for the 4 years that they've been put in place. But you can then see a pro-growth model that would work. You would see some savings, which is good, but you'd also see additional spending.
You'd mentioned a couple of regulations that you say are hurting businesses, and I wanted to ask a little bit about regulation. Because you can argue that proponents of some of these regulations would say, okay, maybe the growth rate is lower, but it's a lot more predictable rather than having the wide ups and downs that we saw in the market 4 or 5 years ago, and that that may actually be more stable than what we've seen.
Well, nobody wants to have low growth rates because of stability. I mean, I would much rather, you know, see an environment, a legislative environment that's going to allow stronger, faster growth. And here's why. At a 1.3% growth rate for our GDP, you have $16 trillion in debt, and you have $16 trillion in our GDP. We can't keep, our growth rate cannot keep up with the borrowing rate that's occurring. So we're on a one-to-one equivalent in terms of borrowing and growth. That's not good for any economy, and that's not good for any balance sheet. Secondly, in order to have real job growth, you want to see about 225 to 275,000 jobs per month being created. Last month, we created 114,000. That's pretty good for, you know, a state like Texas, but it's terrible for the country as a whole. And finally, when you have the lowest labor participation rate in 30 years, people coming off the rolls, not looking for jobs anymore, it shrinks the economy. That is not good at all. We want to have an environment where people are excited about job opportunities. They're getting back into the workforce. They're making more money. Because if they make more money, they do save more and they spend more. That is going to get our economy at a significantly higher growth rate. And the growth rates, you know, should be, you know, 3%, 4%, 5% each and every quarter if you have those policies in place for the long term that are going to provide that long-term predictability. That's what I continue to hear from job creators, small business owners. Think about a small business owner who has passed through, pays his taxes on the individual side. Not knowing at the end of the year what your tax rate's going to be has a direct effect on how you're going to take those dollars and reinvest them in your own small business.
Just a couple more questions for you before we wrap up here. I wanted to ask about loopholes, which is part of your call for an overhaul of the tax system. The call to eliminate loopholes is something we hear across the spectrum, but the question is which loopholes? And also then, does that include subsidies? Because some people do include that as loopholes, and some say that's an entirely different thing, something like subsidies for oil and gas. Would that be considered as a loophole that might be worth closing?
Well, on the corporate side, I think the general feeling in the House is this. Let's reduce the rate. Even the President of the United States has said that, and then and try to simplify the code and eliminate loopholes or deductions. The deductions that people refer to for oil and gas are manufacturing deductions, so that apply to more than just oil and gas companies. My sense, though, is we want to have a level playing field. We want a fairer system that is also going to be competitive. Right now, remember, at a 35% tax rate on the corporate side, we are the highest tax corporate rate in the world. Canada, our neighbor, just reduced theirs to 15%. So my focus would be, let's have an eye on global competition. Let's find a way to have a fairer system where they're across different industries, businesses are paying the same effective rate, and that is the goal. I think that you will see that proposal come forward, certainly at least from the House of Representatives, and I hope that we can work with the Senate on getting something long-term, because this has now become more about, as important as fairness is and effective rate is, this has become a competitive issue, and we are not nearly as competitive as we were 5 years ago. That's sending companies across the ocean to go do business overseas rather than right here in America.
Last question, and this is one we're asking every candidate. As you propose these ideas on jobs and the economy, what would you tell Granite Staters to look for in 2 years about these policies to see whether or not they're better off economically than they are here in 2012?
Well, I think there's a number of things you want to look at, and I tend to look at how local communities are doing in terms of their revenues, how the state is doing in terms of its revenues. I look at, you know, building permits in local communities to see how people feel about the economy. You know, most people appreciate that if you make a substantive policy change, it's going to take some time for it to take effect. We have now had that under this administration. We've had 4 years of these policies to be able to take effect, and it doesn't appear, based on any objective measurement, that you're seeing a renewed strength in the economy. So what I would look at is a lot of those indicators, and then consumer confidence. That does matter, and what small business owners are saying, doing in terms of job creation. And in terms of their long-term planning. So those are some of the things that I would look for in a couple of years after these policies are put in place.
Congressman Frank Yinta, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.